You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Whether it is the UN Relief Agency, UNRWA, or the Red Cross, or Oxfam, all agree the Israeli siege of Gaza is a human catastrophe for the 1.5 million Palestinians imprisoned there. And the UN Secretary General and the UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief and the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights all have called on Israel to lift its siege. And Israel brushes off these organizations and individuals like small flies, unworthy of serious attention. And not one government leader in the US, Canada, or Western Europe raises their voice in criticism. To discuss the human condition in Gaza, I'm joined by Reem Abdulkader. She is a clinical social worker with children. She's a member of Health Professionals Against the Siege of Gaza, and we've reached her in Toronto. Good morning, Reem, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning, Mordecai. Thanks for having me.
I'm told that Gazans have a joke that when the power is off, as is so often the case, at least there's not much food in the refrigerator to perish. What is the food situation for the people of Gaza right now?
That's just one part of it. According to UNRWA, they're basically supplying over a million citizens with basic food needs, and they haven't been allowed to supply them on a regular basis. When the recent blockade a week ago, the supplies had run out. November 14th, if I remember correctly, UNRWA supplies said that the supplies had completely run out. So you're talking a million people without basic food supplies being available. And they talk about the Israeli government letting things trickle in from day to day. They can go a week without not letting anything in and then let a little bit come in for a day. That might not be enough for the million, but they have to spread it out and then so on and so forth. So this has been going on for over a year now, and which, of course, in turn causes major health issues, which is what we have been focusing on and advocating for, which is, of course, a basic human right.
What are some of those health issues?
Well, to begin with, over 70% of infants are anemic. And when you're talking anemia at your first initial lifetime, you're talking about major organs eventually maybe closing down, not being able to function, and other illnesses coming on. And more than 10% of infants have stunted growth. Then, of course, you have, children that are malnourished, and you have alarming deficiency of iron and vitamin A and D throughout because of the diet restrictions and the shift in it throughout the territories, and just progressive deterioration in food security for over 70% of Gaza's population on an ongoing basis for over a year and a half. So it's just too much. Over and above that, they can't access medical treatment as their health deteriorates because of the shortage in food and other supplies and basic needs. You also have your ill patients that can't get access to treatment because of the fuel supply and fuel shortages and electrical shortages, hospitals not running, doctors not being able to meet their patients' needs, patients not being able to leave the country for cancer treatment and other life-threatening illnesses and diseases. And, the Red Cross, Amnesty International, even the United Nations have all come up out and spoken out, but unfortunately on deaf ears.
I was reading that infants because of the unreliability of the power and
right.
lack of power, that the staff are having to hand pump
yeah.
oxygen to keep these infants alive. It must be just an amazingly tragic situation.
Very. And this is the children, and you've got people on dialysis, basically they're saying, you know, they're not getting their dialysis, which basically translates into blood clots, constant blood clots for them. And, you know, just an increase in death as a result of it, of things that are very small. And even access to medication is not available. You know, the regular medications that that they need. They are doing the hand pumping. The low temperatures in the hospitals for the infants are also hurting them in the hospitals. Day-by-day existence in general is very difficult. 160 essential medicines have run out that they can't get access to. And there have been Israeli physicians. I believe it was around October 8th, the Israeli medical team that attempted to carry out operations and medical consultations and provide training on trauma. You know, they were trying to get into Gaza to help their fellow medical and fellow West medical professionals, and the Israeli authorities refused permission to let them in.
Right now, in addition to that, which I was not aware of, there's a block on any media entering. A papal representative who wanted to go and perform a Christian service in relation to the upcoming Christmas events was banned. Human rights observers are banned. It seems that this kind of tightening of the torture, of the intensity of the siege, just goes step by step in a very obviously planned way.
Very much so, and it really actually also devalues any talk about, unfortunately, never again. That statement means nothing anymore when we are watching a people get squeezed to death. And a large power like Israel, military power like Israel, shutting a democracy, shutting off the media, shutting off human rights activists from going in and squeezing a people to death, this is genocide. Slow torture genocide, a very different approach to genocide. Nevertheless, it's killing them. It's a long, slow death that the world is going has gone silent about and is allowing to happen. And amid all the closures, the Israeli army forces have launched several raids into Gaza, killing more than a dozen Palestinians over the month that we don't hear about. That we only hear, unfortunately, about the rockets that go into Israel, which are no better. But let's get real. These people are dying.
When Israel withdrew the Jewish settlers, now that some time ago, and shifted to the strategy of an enforced siege on the 1.5 million Palestinians in Gaza, they used an intentional tactic in the first period, which was to have planes fly low and break the sound barrier at unpredictable times. And the head of the Gaza Mental Health Clinic at that time, Iyad Siraj, spoke of the extremely destructive effect this had on the mental stability of children in particular. I'm wondering if you could talk about what are some of the psychological effects of this physical deprivation, confinement, isolation, all these factors, consequences of the siege. How does that impact, particularly on children, in terms of their mental health?
Well, children are not developing emotionally and mentally anywhere near an average child would be. We have concerns about our soldiers in Afghanistan and elsewhere and the PTSD they suffer. These children don't suffer PTSD because there's no post-trauma. There's constant trauma from the day they open their eyes, because this has been an ongoing issue for years, more so in the last year. These children have just basic issues of bedwetting well into their early teens sometimes. Night terrors, not being able to leave their parents' sides, not being able to sleep alone, constantly afraid to go out, and if they do go out, they're reactive and they become violent. They start to identify with their oppressors and the violence that they're constantly seeing. These children, now you look at your adolescents at this stage, these are the ones that grew up with Israeli army forces at every point that they turned, and armed Israeli forces. These infants, these younger children now, are seeing nothing but living with frightened parents, just always looking over their shoulders, feeling that they cannot keep their children safe, and the children can feel that. They do not feel safety in any form or manner whatsoever in their lives. Their parents cannot keep them safe, emotionally, mentally, or physically, because it's not in their hands. So these children cannot develop, they cannot concentrate. They have what we might perceive here as more like hyperactivity disorder, high anxiety, very agitated, attention deficit, what we would probably misdiagnose them with attention deficit because of the anxiety and the fears that they have been living with in their very short lives. And it's constant. There's no post-trauma. The trauma has not stopped. So when we look at our soldiers that come back and our our boys and girls, men and women that come back from overseas and what they have to deal with, they come back to a peaceful place where they can feel safety to get treatment to help them come back to a state of functioning and calm and safety. These children never do. Never do. It's constant. Whether it's the physical deprivation of proper nutrition, the planes going over, the constant fire rockets that go over that we don't hear about, unfortunately, in our mainstream media, or it's the constant fears of their own parents not being able to meet their needs as a result of the siege, as a result of the occupation. And when Israel first pulled out and pulled the settlements out, the Israelis were petrified because they anticipated this. Us out here didn't understand the extent of their fear because we didn't realize what they knew, what they expected would happen, and it did. It happened. This is what they were. This was their worst nightmare, and it happened. And this is what these children live with. This is what they live with. They can't draw pictures of flowers, unfortunately. They draw pictures of what they lived, and this is what they draw pictures of.
It is heart-wrenching and grim, and I appreciate your sharing knowledge of it because that is the first step to people taking some action here to try and end that siege. Thank you very much, Reem.
Thank you, Mordecai. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye. I've been speaking with Reem Abdelkader, a clinical social worker with children. She's a member of Health Professionals Against the Siege of Gaza, and we reached her in Toronto.